Hello, dear friends. Welcome to the Principled Podcast. From the work we do with hundreds of school leaders around the globe, it is becoming clearer and clearer to us at Making Stuff Better that a new way of thinking is needed in order to meet the needs of a rapidly changing world. The challenge and opportunity for us at MSB is always this: how can we help leaders in schools develop new ways of thinking that align with the emergent reality of life in the 21st century? If we accept that a new way of thinking is needed, which we do, and that educators are pivotal in creating the conditions for change that are so needed in the world, then what are the implications for school leaders as they continue to grow learning communities that thrive? It's a big question. So for this second season, we're going to refine our quest and focus specifically on systemic and organizational health. What is it? What does it feel like? How do you create it? And what matters about it? And how might thinking from a systemic perspective help us in the challenges I've just outlined? We're not looking for a single answer. As Meg Wheatley rightly says, everyone in a complex system has a slightly different interpretation. The more interpretations we gather, the easier it becomes to gain a sense of the whole. So, gather interpretations we will. Join us in this second season where we will draw on wisdom of leaders from the worlds of ecology, systems thinking, poetry, dendrology, that's the study of trees, I had to look it up, and many, many more. This season is a series of journeys we will take to explore what organisational health means in a school in the 21st century. It's by me, Matt Hall, and my friend and colleague, Naomi Ward, powered by Making Stuff Better. Well, here we are, another week, another episode, and curious to hear about Sam Isaacson, who's joining us today, and who you know a little bit more about than I do, Naomi. So I'm going to let you do the honours.
Thank you. Well, I came across Sam Isaacson talking about shifting cultures in a sustainable way. So we have a real interest in what a coaching culture looks like. So I was really interested in what Sam has to say about the systems and structures that you need to create that. But as I found out more about Sam, I realized he's kind of a polymath who's also fascinated and at the leading edge of artificial intelligence. He's a writer. He's got a book coming out this autumn. Yeah, I just felt that we had to have him on the podcast and hear what he had to say about organizational health.
Sounds great. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to the Principled Podcast. And as you know, in season two, we are exploring the theme of organizational health. So we're delighted to welcome Sam Isaacson to the podcast today. How are you, Sam?
Hi, Naomi. Yes, I am doing well today. Yeah, it's a nice sunny day and that's shining straight through the skylight above me onto my head, reminding me of being a nice day outside. So maybe I'll get out a bit later on today.
Excellent. So much that we could explore, but I'll start with what's on your mind, really, when we evoke this idea of organizational health. What does that mean to you and how does that show up in your work?
Yeah, I think for me, really, organizational health is probably captured in that word that's around quite a lot for various different reasons. Sustainability, you know, when the idea of health comes up, it's easy to think about individual health. And what that means for me when my health is good is that I don't notice it. The things are just operating well and smoothly. It's when there's something wrong that it becomes an issue. And I think in organizations, then it tends to be the case that we notice the things that aren't working well. And we only notice that, you know, when things are going wrong. And so when things are operating as they ought to be, when things are healthy, then all of the systems and structures are in there to protect things from going wrong and to make sure that things continue to perform in the way that they are doing and are meant to over the longest term possible. Really. And that requires quite a lot of considered thought. I think, you know, actually it's easy to slip into habits and do things because that's the way we've always done them or we've seen it somewhere else. And actually thinking these things through properly is a really good thing to do. You know, it's an important health check for us to be performing.
So systems and structures. And I know in your work, you sort of hold these different dimensions, I guess, of the systems and structures that create sustainability, and then also eyes on the horizon of what's emerging. Maybe you can share a little bit about how those two things intersect and what that looks like.
Well, I suppose you're slightly drawing on my combined background of having worked for years and years in the world of technology audits, which is all about predictable systems, processes, control structures that you're able to measure and observe. And then combining that with the world of coaching and organization development, which can feel a lot more reactive, can feel a lot more intangible. You know, you're trying to mess around with ideas like culture, which it's difficult to even come up with a definition that's universally accepted. And I find that, you know, combining these two worlds together is really important, because in an organizational context, there's a lot that's going on that's very difficult for us to wrap our heads around. And the ideas of policies and procedures, which are set in place with appropriate approval mechanisms and all of that good stuff, that exists for a reason. You know, they have been put in place to protect against things going wrong. And when we're reacting to what's in front of us by doing what feels right, you know, the likelihood of it being right is a roll of the dice. And it feels to me like with an organization with so many people and the impact on the wider systems that the organization is interacting with, actually putting in place some structures to reduce that likelihood of something going wrong to the absolute minimum is a really important thing to do.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I guess if you have faith in the systems and structures, then that creates the opportunity to have that attunement to the future. A lot of our listeners might be thinking about that communication in their school, and that's arguably at the center of any culture, you know, how we communicate with each other. And how might you support an organization to understand whether what they're doing is working, rather than just sort of thinking, I think things are better? Yeah, that's a question we were sort of thinking about at MSB, certainly.
So you're thinking about how to communicate around the development of culture so that you know that it's heading in the right direction, if I'm understanding that right.
Yeah, like you say, culture is this intangible thing. And yet, if this is something that you're working in partnership with to change, are there systems and structures and ways of knowing that what you're doing is making that change?
Yes, and the problem with culture is that you only feel it. And so we're sort of trapped in this world where it's tempting to measure the things that are the easiest to measure, not necessarily the things that are right to measure. And when it comes to culture, the only thing that matters is how people feel. But that's extremely difficult to measure. You know, you can send out a pulse survey every so often and just see how are you feeling today, and maybe ask even some targeted questions. But all that you're really capturing is that person in that moment. And so the means by which you define what the culture ought to look like in the future, or even understand what it's looking like now and then track progress towards that, is really nuanced. You know, you need to kind of work that up in every organization uniquely to it. And I mean, I personally think a really helpful way to do this is through coaching, actually. You know, there's a way where in coaching conversations, people are opening up about things that they wouldn't necessarily even report back in some sort of survey. And through the role of a supervisor or some other intermediary, you're able to then get an aggregated view across those conversations in terms of how people are actually feeling within an organization. And that can be a really helpful insight. But there are other ways as well. There's the culture web. I'm assuming you're familiar with the culture web.
I have looked at it. It's a sort of a component to sort of audit or pay attention to in development of culture. Is that right?
Yeah, so it's a cluster of different ways for you to measure culture. And the way that you identify what the culture is by identifying the common threads across all of those. So you look at the signs and the symbols and the power structures and the stories that people tell and a couple of other things. And as you're looking across all of these and you notice, oh, isn't that interesting that, for example, a certain very small number of staff have got their own private offices with their name on the door written on a metal panel, and other people just have a desk. Well, that's communicating something about the culture. And so when you take everybody so that everybody's got exactly the same sort of working environment, then it communicates something different. It's not right or wrong, you know, it's appropriate in the context, but having a look at those things, you use the word audit. That's a really important word for me, you know, and I think it's helpful to have that sort of independent review of what do things look like at the moment. This is an accurate snapshot of how things are, and just increases awareness of what direction do we want things to be moving into in the future.
I want to pick up on that thread, Sam, because one of the things I know from reading about your work is this idea of leading from the future as a kind of core component of the type of leadership that you develop. And the way, I think, I don't want to misquote you, but the way you've worded it is around leaders who make decisions across generations. And as listeners will know, who've listened to several of these episodes now, often when we think of systemic health and thinking systemically, I think, maybe this is my bias as a former geography teacher, I go spatial. I think of the system as a web, and I think of the spatial components of system. I do this here and it affects someone over there. But I think conceptually, sometimes when we think of systemic health and leading systemic health, we maybe don't, and maybe this is my bias, but I don't think it is, we don't maybe think about systemic health in terms of time or generations. So I'm really curious to hear your perspective on that and how you've seen that show up in the work you do with leaders.
Well, thank you for allowing me to casually the idea that I there's a new book out.
Oh, right.
Next Generation Leadership.
Yeah.
It's a bit of an experiment in some ways, to be honest, but exactly as you just described there around this idea of leaders leading from the future, that's part of the key message behind it, really. I describe it as being leader as an ancestor. And so if you are a leader, you're making decisions. Are they the sorts of decisions that you would be proud to describe to your children or grandchildren? And the image that I like to portray in leaders' minds is, imagine that you're leading in the present day, but you're actually a time traveler, and you've come back in time 20, 30 years to the present day, and now you have to lead in the knowledge of what you have seen in the future. I think that's going to change the way that you make decisions. And so the pressure that a lot of leaders feel under to deliver against extremely short-term objectives, reacting to the next thing that's in front of them, you're making decisions very rapidly. You know, as we talk about decisiveness as a leadership competency, that's all over the place. Mm. I think, oh, well, actually, I think some attributes that are much more important for leaders, I think it is important to be decisive, appropriately decisive, but I'd probably much rather work with a leader who is brave and has integrity and wisdom and kindness. Mm. That's the sort of leadership which I think does carry across generations. And when we look back at leaders in the past, the ones that are the most inspiring to us, the ones that motivate us the most, are the ones that have those fundamental attributes. And the decisiveness is important. And there are some leaders where we think, oh, you know, this particular leader did make decisions very quickly under a lot of pressure. They're often the ones that have this sort of, that there's a lot of balance in the way we talk about them. Oh, you know, they're admirable for that reason. And also they've got some fundamental flaws. And so I think that idea of next generation leadership, there's plenty more in that framework than purely that, but that is really important to me. And I think within the context of organizations, leaders are really important, and the systems within which they operate are important as well, because if you don't have them, then you're hoping. And that's kind of not good enough if we're looking over the longer term.
Hello, friends. It's Matt here, just interrupting your podcast to let you know that if you're enjoying the nature of the guests and the conversations, then there's plenty more
to get involved in over at MSB. We run a symposium series. These are interactive, live, online workshops, two or three times a term, where we invite speakers from the podcast and beyond to come and work directly with school leaders and educators around the world. They're small groups, no more than 40 normally in a session, and they are really, really engaging and stimulating ways of thinking and reflecting on your leadership. All you have to do is head over to makingstuffbetter.com/symposium and you can sign up for 1, 2, 3, as many of them as you like. And we'd love to see you there. That's makingstuffbetter.com/symposium. They really, really are exciting and engaging workshops from a range of really interesting and different speakers. Hope to see you there. On with the podcast.
And I can see Naomi itching to ask a question, and I am as well. But go on ahead. Go ahead, Naomi.
Well, I don't know if this is useful, but I'm just curious about leaders you see that are doing that well, because we're certainly surrounded by leaders who aren't. Where do you see that good ancestral leadership playing out in the world today?
I mean, I think we see aspects of it in a lot of different places. It's the people who are standing up for the most vulnerable in society who I think are the ones to be applauded for it. And unfortunately, so the phrase that I use in the book, the subtitle to the book is Next Generation Leadership, and the subtitle is A Blueprint for Systemic Kindness. And the reason I've gone down that route is because it feels to me like a lot of the systems that we have in place are to blame for the fact that leadership is often not so positive, or at least it's easy to see in the media's portrayal of it. So politicians, as one example, there are two massive examples of this. One is politicians who are quite transparently driven purely to get votes at the next election. And maybe at the surface level, that's a good thing, because if you're a good politician, you're going to get voted back in. But actually, what it tends to lead to, for some reason, is, well, it's okay if you lie, because if you lie, then that's going to get people onto your side. It's okay to push people to extreme positions and polarize people against each other, because then they're distracted by the topic and aren't going to be focused on the actual things that you're doing. And so that's, as much as it is maybe an example of poor leadership, actually it's the system that's generating that. That's the cause behind the symptom. And it's the same's true in big private, well, actually not just big, but in the private sector. If you've got funding in a small organization from, you know, a venture capitalist or something like that, or if you are floated on the market and so your share price is the only thing that your shareholders are caring about really on a day-to-day basis, every decision that's made, particularly at that most senior leader level, is going to be around the shortest term and around the most, around the finances only. So actually the difference that is being made, for example, to the planet, you know, you can look at big energy providers and think, oh, you know, what are you doing as far as fossil fuels are concerned? It would be easy to think, as a leader in one of those organizations, it's important that we start to talk about green energy because that helps our marketing efforts, or it limits the effects of a fine. But actually, if we're going to get a fine for it, that's just a business cost. And so if that's a business decision to make, then that feels appropriate. And it shouldn't, you know, we should be thinking about what's the right thing to do. So yeah, the fact that it's so easy to come up with poor examples and it's not that easy to come up with really good examples, I think is a symptom of the underlying cause, really.
And if I translate that to the world that maybe some of our listeners inhabit, of course, I always have to be really careful not to generalize in doing that, because I'm hoping we have more than one listener. The equivalent there, I think, often is, you know, that short-termism you talked about, is that the eyes are always on next year's results. So it's, you know, what are the what are the outcomes for our students at the different levels of or age groups that get tested? And often in the case of the international school sector, I mean, literally, what's our profit? You know, what's the revenue against cost and how many children are we enrolling? So there is a real challenge there that I think our listeners would identify with particularly in the game of education, right? Where thinking intergenerationally is so important and thinking about the legacy you're creating as a school leader. And yet you're facing these really immediate short-term demands that may not be quite as crude or as negative in their impact as maybe some of those that you've described that politicians or big fossil fuel companies create by meeting, but they're still very real.
Well, it's the perfect example, isn't it? Because every stakeholder in the entire system, every stakeholder knows that the right thing to do is to give those children who are affected by it most immediately the best chance in their next phase of life. That's the purpose of them coming to the school. It's the reason that the teachers turn up. It's the reason that the leaders are trying to make the decisions that they are. There's a pragmatism around the fact that, well, we do need to remain a going concern. It's not helpful for anybody if we don't make the numbers. But what we're trying to do through that is, I suppose what I'm trying to help leaders do through that is to make the difficult decisions that are going to, in the moment, feel more challenging because it is focused more on the long term rather than on delivering those numbers. And exam results are important. I'm not saying, no, we shouldn't be looking at exam results, but it's thinking about it within the context of everything else that's going on, you know, doing the thing that's going to lead to the greatest good. And actually, even in that situation where you've got somebody who, on the surface of things, doesn't particularly care about the student experience, is focused more on the figures, you know, finances, actually, when they're pushed, they want the children to have a good time as well. You know, it's not just the case that somebody who's sitting in some fund manager or some high net worth individual who's looking for a return, even though they're doing it primarily to make profit, I don't think that those people, when they are slowing down and they're thinking through what is it I really want to make happen, I don't think that they think, oh yeah, I would be happy for people's lives to be negatively affected so I can make a bit more money. They don't want that, even if they think they do. And that's kind of the whole purpose of my book, really, is to say, like, just, if you slow down, this is really my message to leaders. It's why I love coaching so much, is if you slow down and you think things through properly, and more than just think, but you feel, then you make better decisions, and they're decisions that everybody else feels like that actually was the right thing to do. And that, I think, is the right out. You know, we know what good looks like when we see it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, slowing down is, yeah, foundational to the work we do. We talk about less preparation, more presence as the foundation of conversations. And a word that's coming up for me as well is balance, and that inner coherence that we need to have things in balance. If there's too much emphasis on one thing and not the other, we know it. But I'm also wondering about the external influences and thinking about education. I'm thinking about, you know, artificial intelligence and thinking about generational change, like the conversations my daughters have about their school experience, they're pretty critical. And I think they're going to start looking for other experiences. So how does the external world kind of shape systems, and how can leaders be attuned with that and not afraid of that and work with that? Is that something that you explore?
Well, for me, see, everything is connected, isn't it? And that's kind of the nature of it, that in the book, what I talk about is the deep personal work that leaders need to do in order to get to a point so that those things aren't stressors or distractors. They're just a data point. So artificial intelligence is a great example of this. it's developing at a rate that nobody can keep up with. And we're seeing new products emerging all of the time. We've got new regulation coming in left, right, and center. We've got lawsuits being threatened and raised, and we've got people struggling with it in every single direction that we look. And nobody knows what the future is going to look like. So how are we going to be using AI in 10 years' time? Nobody knows. But there's a huge amount of activity and stress about it. You know, people are panicking at every level. You know, people who are just turning up to work and are feeling threatened about their jobs, people who are in leadership positions feeling like, oh, we should be getting benefit from this, and we want to be doing it in the right way. And is it even possible? And we don't want to be risking everything for the sake of it. If we're leading from the future, what that means is that we've done all of that work ourselves, thinking through what we think is possible, educating ourselves, keeping ourselves informed, so that when the latest piece of news breaks, it's not a surprise to us, but we've already sort of gone through that process. And it's the same with any other external force, you know, whatever shape that takes. And we are all connected. You know, if something happens in one country, it's likely to have a knock-on effect, which is ultimately going to lead to something happening here as well. And so I think that's what it's about, is about leaders being able to take the time out themselves to slow down, not just to make decisions, but to slow down to recognize who they are as human beings and bring their whole human self into the decision-making process, so that when there is some decision that needs to be made, they're able to confidently say to themselves and even to their leadership team, I'm feeling quite afraid at the moment. Anybody else feeling that? Mm-hmm. And just have a conversation about the fact that, yeah, we're feeling afraid. Should we just feel afraid together for a bit? That's okay. Let's do that. Now we've done that, suddenly we feel free and we can come up with these new decisions, you know, new ideas that would never have been there before if we had done what the world seems to tell us to do, which is to quell or ignore fear, in which we just get numb to our emotions. And then we're acting from a place of being so narrow in the way that we kind of apply ourselves and can feel it physically, you know, we end up sort of closed in, which doesn't help things. So it's extremely complex. And that idea of deep work, I think, is absolutely critical for leaders.
Sam, I'm sad to say that despite the richness of the conversation, we're running slightly out of time. I'd love you just to let us know what, a little bit more about the book and where people can get it from and what they can expect.
Sorry, you don't realize what you've just asked. The simple answer to the question is it's available on Amazon. That's the easiest place to get it. You can also get it direct through me, but Amazon's going to be the easiest, and it's called Next Generation Leadership, A Blueprint for Systemic Kindness. What people can expect is that there is some prose inside there to sort of explain the model and my thinking, which I've kind of explained a lot of today. The majority of the book is actually in the form of a poem, and each few lines of the poem is presented against a background of artworks that I've generated using artificial intelligence, which is intended to be a bit of a reflective experience, so that as you're going through the poem, you're managing to reflect on it as you're going. And so there's an interpretive element to the way that you're reading it as well. So it's a bit different from a traditional leadership textbook.
Sounds great. And it answers, I think, the question I normally finish us with, which is how can school leaders access this way of thinking that you describe? And it sounds like the answer is, I don't want to overplug it, but it sounds like the answer is get the book.
Well, yeah, that's the answer to every question.
It is.
I one of my books, but I think, I think that the book is, I think it's really nice. I work very hard on it. I also think there's a high level of interpretation in it. And so I strongly suggest to people pick up a copy of the book and also run some sort of workshop, you know, a day away with a leadership team. And obviously that's the sort of thing that I love to do personally anyway. And that's a way then that you're able to sort of pull out some of the truths that are hidden behind the intentionally sort of vague poetic language in there.
Thanks so much for your time today, Sam. Really appreciate it.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, another wonderful conversation and food for thought. And I'm wondering, Matt, what are you taking away from our conversation with Sam?
I mean, again, just so much, I feel so privileged to do these podcasts and just meet these extraordinary thinkers that it's really hard to distill and reflect kind of in the aftermath. My brain's exploding. But I think the big piece for me when we're trying to think about where this fits in our wider objective of exploring organizational health is the intergenerational part that Sam talked about. And this idea that, you know, it says on his website, I love it, the next generation of leaders act as if their souls have traveled from the future, contemplating the trajectory of decisions as well as their ethics. No, and they're therefore with that lens, they have the ability to really think about the impact of what they're doing, but not with the short-termism that he kind of tells us to be so wary of. You know, and I sometimes think you struggle a bit with the role of technology in schools, the role of technology in coaching. But again, with that lens, kind of using it as a filter onto which technologies you think will stand the test of time and will remain kind of firm against time pressure, peer pressure, social forces. It's a really useful way of viewing an organization or viewing your role as a leader, but it takes a lot of slowing down to tap into and to really put your brain into that space or your body into that space. But I think that for me is the takeaway.
Yeah. And it feels thematic, doesn't it, across quite a few of our conversations, that the kind of long term and slowing down. And I love that he encouraged us, because Sam Isaacson is a real expert on artificial intelligence and how that is used in coaching and organizations. And we're fearful of it, aren't we? But so we have to kind of feel that fear, start to move towards it. We encourage you to look at Sam's book, Next Generation Leadership, which is written as a poem, which again, I think is extraordinary and bold and shows Sam's talent in all these different areas. And as usual, he's on LinkedIn. So do connect and continue the conversation.
Looking forward to the next one, Naomi. See you there.
See you soon.
Thank you for coming along with us on this principled journey. To learn more about making stuff better and how we can help you and leaders in your school, please do get in touch through hello@makingstuffbetter.com. Alternatively, you can find us in all the usual places like LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook. Links are in the show notes below. And don't forget to subscribe, and if you can, leave us a review. That's all for now. See you next time.